Mod on 2FM. With Green Firm, a nourishing addition to any sandwich, salad, stir fry, or snack. Natural protein, your way.
It's Monday, the 19th of July. Coming up on Game On tonight, we speak to Gary Murphy after Seamus Power's life-changing victory on the PGA Tour as Colin Morikawa wins the Open at his first attempt.
After an unprecedented success at European Athletics Under-20s, we ask Cathal Dennehy, could we be sending more sprinters to Tokyo?
It's going to be Adelike. She's being challenged by Eze. And on the inside, Illich comes through for a surprise silver medal, but there was no doubt at all from the first 10 metres that gold was going to Ireland and gold was going to Rashida Adelike.
We'll ask Niall Moran if anyone can stop three in a row Munster champions Limerick.
Agastradan, Farkart, Lavelle, Munchelva, Kyle Hayes, Fogaldini, Tihirvo, Skilal and O'Kyle Hayes, and Mohoshan Balakar Fogg, Kyle Hayes, it's all cool! Oh!
And my cue out of that was the word Limerick, but my lack of Irish, I couldn't tell you if they said Limerick at the end of that or not. But anyway, with Tyrone set to face Monaghan in the Ulster final, we asked Brendan Devaney, will either be good enough to match the other provincial champions?
Up against Niall Morgan. Oh, it's off the front of the upright, it's gone wide. A miss by Michael Murphy. And a let off for Tyrone. Could that be a major turning point in this game? Lobbed in here in front of Darren McCurry. Took it on immediately. He's really, really hot this season. Playing some wonderful football. He's got 7 today. It's got a winning look about it. And Tyrone are ahead by 21 points to a goal and 14.
Now, if you want to get in touch, you can text us on 51552 or tweet at GameOn2FM.
Game On on 2FM.
Now, Ruby, did you have a nice weekend? Did you go out and enjoy the sunshine or sit in and watch wall-to-wall sport on the telly?
I'm afraid, Marie, I was working on Saturday at the Curragh, so I was watching all the racing there. But yesterday afternoon, my eldest daughter was competing in a tetrathlon, so that's where I was for the day. So I spent some of the afternoon in the car listening to the radio. Listening to Jackie Hurley.
Oh,
I was going to say the Sunday game, but it's not Sunday sport, is what it was. And I thought that was interesting. Dublin Mead, the golf, the updates, the whole lot. So as we got down the M1 onto the M50, Gillian was in front of me in one car, and I was behind driving the pony. And it was McDonald's time. So we're on the M50, both on the north side of Dublin, two McDonald's. She went to one, I went to the other. And we left one McDonald's on the phone to each other. It had no milkshakes, no soft drinks. And when one of my daughters, I'm not saying which car she was in, opened her Happy Meal, she had gotten a chicken nugget with a bite taken out of it.
Oh no.
So Marie, did that come out of the bin? Was it a recycled Happy Meal? Or did someone serve her the dinner? Was that just a little bit hungry? But I must say, I was unbelievably let down by McDonald's.
Did you eat your McDonald's then? What do you do when that happens?
So it was in the McDonald's Gillian was in, so I did eat mine. With the girls I had, it was Gillian and my other daughter who didn't eat theirs, but I must say, that took the shine off the weekend for me, I'm afraid.
And you're such a fan of McDonald's as well.
I was.
Oh, that hurts.
Was. It's past tense, but there was some great sport at the weekend, Marie. I did say I enjoyed the Sunday game last night watching all the football and the hurling. I enjoyed the golf last night. I even enjoyed the race. And I thought Snowfall was brilliant in the Curragh on Saturday. She was entitled to do what she did, but she did it. The weather was fantastic. And to be honest with you, I'm fairly happy I wasn't at the beach looking at the pictures and the crowds. I'd say they were probably the most uncomfortable places to be.
Yeah, I was there for a little while on Saturday morning, but I was clever enough to go there at 9 o'clock and leave at 12 and be back for the Clare Wexford match, which was very enjoyable. So I planned it out perfectly. Now, before we do get into what was a wonderful weekend of sport, I just want to have a quick chat with you about Rachel Blackmore and her injury. So Jennifer Pugh, the senior medical officer, she tweeted that Rachel sustained a fractured ankle and hip injury following her fall on Friday evening, and that she had surgery. How bad an injury is that, Ruby? Are they?
Well, a broken ankle wouldn't be overly severe, Marie. I mean, that's 6 to 8 weeks, depending on your age and how quick your bones heal. A broken hip, I'm afraid I did break mine, but it didn't require surgery, so I don't know how long an injury that would take. But the one problem for Rachel is that they're opposite legs. So she's not crutches. It'll be a wheelchair for a while, I would imagine. But look, she's extremely fit, and she will be back. What are you looking at? Probably the guts of 3 months, a little bit longer maybe, but unfortunately it is the only guarantee for a jump jockey that somewhere in your career you will get a fall like that. I mean, Danny Mullins was absolutely flying in this year's Jockeys Championship as well. Himself and Rachel were well clear of the field. He got a fall in Limerick last Saturday and cracked the C6 vertebrae in his neck and crushed T7. So, you know, it's just this time of year, the heat and this warm weather is delightful for most people, but it is a jump jockey's nightmare.
Yeah, the hard ground. And just before we come on air as well, Robbie Power confirmed that he will not be riding at Galway because he has to have surgery on an old back injury. Will there be any jockeys left for Galway?
Yeah, David Russell's not back yet. Robbie Power is out. Rachel's gone. Danny's gone. Of course there is. I won't say the beauty of horse racing, but one person's loss is always somebody else's gain, and racing will continue and other jockeys will get those opportunities.
Right, well, we'll be previewing that a little bit later in the week, and you might even join us at some stage as well, Ruby.
Ah, if you're lucky. The way it's out for the Galway play today, I see Tiger Roll has an entry.
Okay, right.
Which is a surprise.
Well, if it's a surprise to you, it's a surprise to me. Now let's turn our attention to golf.
An unbelievable day. I mean, you know, career changing, life changing, all that kind of good stuff. So, I mean, it's not going to sink in for a while, but it's an amazing day.
That is the voice of Waterford's Seamus Power, who won the PGA Tour's Barbasol Championship after a sudden death playoff. It is life changing for him. And Gary Murphy joins us now on the line to tell us why. Gary.
Hi, Murray. How are you?
Good. How are you?
Yeah, great. Delighted for Seamus. What a performance. He's been playing, you know, probably some of the best golf of his life in recent weeks. Had a great chance just to keep his card, which was his goal, considering he was out of that category. So he was kind of cap in hand. He had a few Monday qualifiers and just couldn't pick and choose when he was going to play. And I actually fancied him big time last week with John Deere, and he had another good week. But this is a whole new story, winning and getting the exemption. He can pick and choose when and where he wants to play. Gets into all the big tournaments. And it's something he deserves, really, because he's had an amazing time of it, from, you know, going to university over there, staying in the States, playing the mini tours, working his way up onto the Corn Ferry to get on the PGA Tour. A lot of people probably only really heard of him at the last Olympics in 2016 when he played, but you know, he's a fabulous golfer, and it's a great news story.
It's an incredible story, and it's probably more realistic of the world of golf, the path that Seamus has followed. We see the likes of Colin Morikawa turning professional, and all of a sudden, boom, just starts winning. But that's not the way it is for the majority of golfers, and Seamus' story, Gary, is probably more realistic of how golfers live.
It is, and it's probably a path I think a lot of them should take, really. I was surprised with John Murphy when he turned pro that he came back to Europe. You know, he had a great amateur career in the States and college in Louisville, and I was surprised that he didn't stay in the States. I mean, it's the only gig in town, really, if you can, you know, because you can get on a Corn Ferry tour and you know, I think the number one thing for a lot of these guys to understand is that they've left the amateur ranks. They're in a business where they have to earn money to pay bills and survive. A lot of them get well sponsored initially at the start, and they're playing on weaker tours where, you know, you can't really earn a living. Now you're starting out to full of hope and all that sort of stuff, and there is a financial kind of hit that you will take starting out, but you can play in many tours in the States or on the second tour, and you know, you can turn profit if you play well, if you're good enough. If you're not good enough, you'll find out sharpish, because if you can't perform at that level, you're more than likely not going to make it anyway. But Seamus bought into himself and believed in himself and worked his way up, having had 4 great years in college, and he's kind of done it the perfect way. He's, even though he hasn't retained a full status to date on the PGA Tour, he's been earning good money, he's been earning a good solid living, and he's now, his belief system hopefully will go through the roof, because he's had many chances for top finishes, and probably might have gotten his own way a little bit, but last night it was just total faith in what he was doing, and And he got a slice of luck too. You have to get a bit of luck. It's, even with Morikawa in the open, you know, everyone needs a bit of luck in order to win. But he's, I think, a road that a lot of other kids, you know, if they are going to go to the States and do that, because, you know, Europe is a struggle at the moment with COVID. It doesn't have the financial clout of America. And I'm just delighted for Seamus because it just changes everything for him.
So what does it mean from a financial outlook for him and also just from a career outlook for him?
Well, he's 630 grand richer today than he was yesterday. It means basically, so the category that he was in, he was just getting into weaker events and wasn't quite sure probably from week to week when he was going to play. So it's very hard then to detail or structure your practice or you know, trying to get ready for tournaments. You just, all right, I'm in, I have to go. So it's all lastminute.com and you're under pressure straight away. Or even if he's Monday qualifying, you go on a Monday, shoot a score. If you get in, great. If you don't, you have another week to hang around, and probably he doesn't want to play another tournament that week, say on the other tour. So now he knows for the next 2 years what tournaments he'll get into. He can play within himself. He doesn't have to be doing this, you know, 6-7 weeks in a row type of thing just to keep going. And he's got the same opportunity that all the top players have. I think it's much harder for some of these players trying to compete against superstars when you're playing a totally different schedule. You're under pressure for your card. You're under pressure for everything that goes with it. And now he's got a blank canvas to just express himself and hopefully he can push on from this.
Well, one individual who certainly expressed himself yesterday was Colin Morikawa. We didn't have the drama of the Sunday at the US Open, but he was a very cool, calculated winner, Gary.
He was. I was very impressed with him. I just think, just at the Memorial, I think we won last year, he just has a steel in his eyes, something similar to what Tiger had. He's one of those can't-miss amateurs that's come out and... he's proven, you know, everyone thought he was going to be a superstar, and he won the USPGA at his first attempt. And he's, after winning the Open Championship, got his first attempt. He's won a WGC. He's won regular tour events. The golf course suited him down to the ground because accuracy was always going to be roll ordered around there. And then he showed he had the nerve under pressure yesterday to do the business.
Even when he left his first putt a bit short on 16, he stood up and he wasn't going to miss the second one. You kind of knew then he needed to make a mistake to lose it anyway, but just when he left the first one short, you were thinking, ooh, is there a doubt there? Yeah. But there wasn't.
Yeah, even on 15 as well. He just had his day. You know, it was never going to go by him, and, you know, speed was pressing so hard. He did great after a terrible start, really. He shot at 6-under his last 12 holes, so he did everything he thought he had to do, but Morikawa was just too good for them all.
Seamus, the best of the Irish, tied 12, 6-under par, rounds of 71, 65, 69, 69. But more importantly, for his goal, or what he meant, we led to believe is his goal for the year, he's gotten himself into that all-important Ryder Cup qualification spot.
Yeah, I think he's kind of good to go at this stage. You know, he's going to play the WGC. He'll be in the FedEx playoffs, so he'll get points for those as well. But he's proven his class. I thought it was a brilliant defence. He just got unlucky on 10. He got a really bad lie and actually held a 20-footer for bogey. So he did well to make 5, and that kind of stopped him in his tracks. But, you know, he had a little bit of a buzz going yesterday, a little bit of hope that it might happen again. Obviously, the leaders just went away from him. But I thought it was a fabulous defence. He's done really well in the majors this year. Really solid at the Masters. 4th at the PGA and a good 12th in his defence. So... no, there's no way. I'd be astonished if he wasn't on that plane going to Whitsun Straits.
We're always lauding Roy McIlroy for his honesty, but what comes with that, Gary, is that sometimes he says things that people aren't too happy with, and he probably did that over the weekend when asked about the Olympic Games, whether he was looking forward to it. He said he doesn't know if there's much to look forward to. It's going to be a very different environment. I'm not a very patriotic guy. I'm doing it because I think it's the right thing to do. Is he as well sometimes just fudging things, Gary?
Well, I think he's playing. The problem with Brazil was this big argument of, you know, growing the game and guys didn't bother, and he's just made that comment. He's there for the game of golf. You know, golf is new to the Olympics. if the best players aren't at the tournament, you know, is it really a worthy gold medal? No, it's not. But that's his point about being patriotic. He's in an impossible situation because he comes from both sides of the fence in the north of Ireland, and some people are happy and some people are sad. No matter what he says, it's the wrong thing. And I think he's right to go at the angle that he is there to try and enhance golf. And maybe not in this generation, but in the next generation, it will be a sport that everyone will get to see on TV. Hence, people will take up the game and play the game, and it'll filter at grassroots level. So he can't win. It's impossible for Rory to win. So whatever he says is the wrong thing. But from the point of view of he's doing his duty as a golfer to try and make the Olympic experience, golf be part of that Olympic experience in the future, he's 100% right. And that's what he said. Once you go on the political side, nobody wins. So he's never going to win that argument. Someone's going to be unhappy.
And I certainly don't envy him even trying to encounter that argument. Gary Murphy, thanks a million for taking our call. We're going to take a quick break. We'll be back after that with Athletics.
Farm's new cooked chicken breast fillets are 100% natural and packed with protein. Available in selected stores nationwide.
Game on 2FM.
Welcome back to Game On with Marie and Ruby. Over the weekend, we were treated to the perfect warm-up for the Olympics with the European Under-20 Championships. 4 gold medals for Ireland, which is pretty incredible, and to reflect on the success and look ahead to the Olympic Games, which start on Friday, journalist Cathal Dennehy joins us. Cathal, first of all, where in the world are you?
I'm actually in Barcelona at the moment in the airport waiting on a connection, so I'll be on the road to Tokyo, or in the air to Tokyo tomorrow morning.
Did you really have to go the long way? You wouldn't have went via Helsinki or somewhere? No, it's Tokyo you're going to, like?
Yeah, there is no easy way. I think every journalist and athlete I've spoken to has had quite the ordeal to trying to get there, so not too much looking forward to the journey, but very much looking forward to getting there.
Look, we have plenty to celebrate after a super weekend in Tallinn, and we have to start with Rashida Adeleke. She was just awesome. I think she captured the attention of everybody on a really busy sporting weekend with gold in the 100 metre and 200 metre finals. She's unbelievable.
She really is. I mean, we haven't had a young sprinter like her ever, really, Rashida, at the age. I mean, she's European under 18 champion 2 years ago, and now she's just crushed the rest of European sprinting teenagers last weekend in Tallinn in Estonia. It was an astonishing performance. She won the 100 metres by, quite a distance, really, but it was really in the 200, her probably speciality event, where she really just rose above. I mean, she's 18 years old, and just to get across the point that she is now faster than any Irish woman in history, despite being only 18, she ran 22.90 to win the 200. And then I think I put a picture up on Twitter the other day just to try and show the screenshot at the finish just how much distance she had put between herself and all the other rivals. And then at the very end of her weekend, a very long season and a very long weekend, I think she ran 6 races, she split the fastest leg of anyone in the 4x400 metres, which is very much not her distance, and helped the Irish team up to 5th. So, yeah, she is an absolute star. And, you know, she's in very good hands. She came through Tala AC. She was with Johnny Fox there, handed over then to Daniel Kilgallen, the coach, who coached her up until earlier this year when she went off to the University of Texas. And she's now based in Texas, where she's guided by Edric Floriel, who's truly one of the true A-list coaches in world sport. He's guided a number of champions, world record holders, basically everyone. So Rashida could not be in better hands. And I think really what stood out to me really in last weekend and that decision to go to Texas is her ambition. She crossed the line last weekend and she almost looked blasé at the finish after winning the European title. She was looking at her time, 11:34, being like, yeah, it's okay. And I think when you see an Irish sprinter winning a European title and not exactly being in joyous celebration, it speaks really to how ambitious she is. And I think that decision to go to Texas also speaks to how ambitious she is, because she doesn't want to just be the best in Ireland. She wants to get right up there with the best in the world. And I think many would feel that the best place to do that is over stateside in that NCAA system.
She was so composed as well in her interviews afterwards for such a young person. But one of my sons is in Tala Athletics Club. And you know when you bring your child up to training and you kind of just usually keep your eyes on them? Well, when I brought him up to training, I would be watching Radisha. She's just so unbelievable. Can you just tell us about what she has?
Well, I think the thing that I guess stands out, and I know it's a bad comparison to make really in terms of Usain Bolt, but when you watch her run in terms of like her height, her stride length, it does kind of remind you, because she kind of almost dwarfs the other competitors on the, and that stride length, I think especially in the 100, you know, it's a work in progress and it's very hard for a tall sprinter to come out of the blocks fast. But in the 200, once she gets into her running, she just leaves them far behind all her peers. And she's been doing that now for a number of years. Like, you know, I think I first watched her when she was about under 14 in Ireland, and I instantly struck at the schools and juvenile all Ireland saying, who is this girl? But yeah, she's only ever progressed since then. And I mean, the future is so, so bright for her. It's 3 years to the Paris Olympics in 2024. She unfortunately isn't going, just missed the standard for Tokyo. But I mean, if she stays right and she stays healthy, she's already a 22.90 runner over 200. You know, like it's a very tough ask to compete with the Jamaicans and Americans. To get into an Olympic final, you'd want to run in low 22 seconds. But at the age of 18, for where she is, I mean, the sky is the absolute limit for her.
There's been a lot of conversation as well about Rashida and whether she should or shouldn't have been picked for that 4x400 mixed relay team. What do you think?
It's just my opinion, but I think it was a horrendous call not to take her to Tokyo. I mean, she's 18 years old. The reason they didn't take her was that she didn't run any outdoor 400 meter races this year. She ran a few indoors. But she was focusing on the 100 and 200 in NCAA system, trying to, I guess, make the NCAAs in those events, and also try to make the Olympic qualifying in over 200, which was a very tough standard of 22.80. She fell just short of that. But because she didn't run any outdoor 400 meters, they didn't pick her, and they picked other athletes who had kind of form in the book, so to speak. But as I said to many people over the past week, the true form for a relay is how fast have you split in a relay, which is the exact activity they will be doing in Tokyo. And there's three women and three men picked for that team in Tokyo. Now, Rashida Alecki, at the end of a long weekend at the NCAA Championships in June, ran a 50.9 second 400 meter split on the relay. The second quickest of anyone this year in a relay is Charlene Maudsley, who also is not running in the relay. She was also not picked because she pulled up at Nationals with a slight injury. And then the third quickest in a leg, but quickest in a normal 400, will be Phil Healy. I don't think anyone could argue with Phil Healy. You know, she's number one pick clearly. But among the other four athletes, you could probably toss it up any number of ways, but it's just my personal opinion. I think I would definitely have Rashida on that team. And I think in Tallinn last weekend, when she ran that anchor leg for the team, you know, she ran 52 point something, I think 52.5 for the split. But if you watch the way she ran it, she went out in 23 seconds for the first 200, because the Irish team were way back, tailed off back in eighth. And she brought them up to third, and then she just ran out of gas in the last 100. If she ran a more composed leg, she could have run, again, another 50.51 second split, and it probably would have looked probably even more embarrassing for Legs Ireland. Look, there's no right answer here. It's really a game of opinions. But my feeling is that, and I know it's shared amongst many in athletics, is that Rashida should be going to Tokyo.
Form over potential. But Nicholas Griggs and Keane McPhillips also won gold at the weekend in the 3,000 metres and the 800 metres. It was an incredible weekend all round, really, for Irish athletes.
It truly was. I mean, you know, I think a good stat to pick out there is that we won four gold medals over the weekend, and obviously we finished third in the medal table as well. But if you go back, this championship has been going for almost 50 years, I think almost half a century, every 2 years it's on. We won four medals in the entire history of these championships, four gold medals in the entire history of the championships before last weekend. And then this trio of just, you know, I suppose a freak is almost like an insulting word, but we mean in the most complimentary way, is that they truly are freakish talents in Keane McPhillips, Nick Griggs and Rashida Adelecki. Obviously we talked about Rashida at length, but Nick Griggs, I mean, Keane McPhillips as well, he's 19 years old, Longford athlete. He's just been on the up and up and up, and he got very bad luck at the European Under 18 Championships a couple of years ago, so he never truly yet got the chance to prove his championship calibre, but he got it last weekend. He was very much academically gifted as well as athletically, so he was really focusing on the Leaving Cert up until last month, didn't do a lot of races, missed a lot of training, and he still came out and beat the best of European teenager 1500 runners last weekend. And then to Nick Griggs, I mean, I think everyone I speak to about this kid, their mind is absolutely blown. And obviously there are so many caveats whenever you're talking about a 16-year-old. There's so many rivers to cross, so many lifestyle health factors that could come into account that would stop them making it at the top level. But I personally have never been as excited about watching a young athlete coming through the ranks in Ireland as I am about Nick Griggs. I was actually, first time I saw him was at the National Senior Championships, and I was sitting beside Rob Heffernan up in the stand, and the two of us actually didn't know who he was at the time, and we were watching him absolutely leave everyone for dust, and both of us were like, oh my God, this kid is special. And last weekend, I mean, what, even when you factor in what he's gone through off the track this summer, I mean, he's 16 years old. His older brother Joshua died in a workplace accident in early June. Nick was out running races within a few days of that. As I wrote today in the newspaper, it was amazing he even got on the start line. But he didn't just do that. He was the youngest in the field by more than a year. He was running against athletes 18, 19 years old. He's only 16. He only took up the sport last year. And he literally looked like he was jogging with 200 metres to go. And then he hit the accelerator and just left him for dead. I don't think I've seen anyone. Kieran McGeehan is probably the most athlete, and maybe Mark English that kind of spring to mind. But I think if Nick Griggs stays in good order, stays in the right hands and stays healthy, he could truly be anything in the years ahead.
It sounds like exciting times. I'm going to correct myself because Keane McPhillips won gold in the 1500, not the 800. Carl, safe flight from Barcelona to Tokyo. I'm sure we'll catch up with you before the 26 Irish track and field athletes face the starter. We're going to take another quick break. Back with the hurling action.
Game on 2FM with Green Firm. Healthy dinners made easy with Green Firm's high protein cooked chicken breast fillets range, available in selected stores nationwide.
Game on 2FM.
Now, we were treated to an epic Munster hurling final yesterday. Tip led by 10 at the break, and then we saw one of the greatest comebacks of all time from Limerick. Gerlach Nan said in his column today that Limerick savaged Tipperary. Niall Moran is with us now. Is that what happened, Niall?
Marie, how are you doing? Yeah, they were superb. I suppose, look, coming away at halftime there, you're saying 10 points down. Not that you were without hope, but it would have taken a major change for them to come back and try and get a victory. But I suppose, look, that 15-20 minutes after halftime, as a Limerick player and a former player in sport and everything else, I've never seen any team from Limerick do that in such a short period of time. They were phenomenal. I suppose what you saw in the first half was Tip came with a great plan. They were executing it. Limerick came with plan A. Plan A wasn't working. And look, the reality of it was, I suppose we were sitting as a sport in line. The idea was get Kyle Hayes centre forward, Keane Lynch to centre back, and maybe Will O'Donoghue to wing back, and that was going to be the winning of the game. And tell you what we know on the sideline, because all John Kiley did in Kinnark was they went and said, hey, we're not doing plan A right, let's do it a hell of a lot better next half round. And they just really came with such intensity, and like within 10-12 minutes of the game, they had the lead pegged back, and there was only going to be one winner.
So who gets the credit here? Is it John Kiley, what he said and did at halftime, bringing on Morrissey and Galan, or is it the players who just played completely at a different level?
I don't think it was like there'd be none of them lads looking for credit for that performance yesterday. I think it's a joint initiative. Look, I suppose they're just their game plan, their coaching has been well heralded all the way throughout. I suppose what you're finding now is you have the belief of All Ireland champions. So I mean, they have two All Irelands underneath them. It's currency. You back yourself. Whereas maybe we might have seen some of the other games that look when plan A wasn't working, then you went to plan B and plan C. And maybe when you do that on occasion, and every team we've all been part of has done it, you probably undermine the process as they went on the months previous to it. So look, they're just a phenomenal players. Like, this is a Limerick team. Like, we're very, very fortunate here. We're not used to having teams, not in their more recent past, that have been just as dominant as this. And do you know what I mean? Like, we have individuals that in time will be regarded as some of the finest players that ever played the game. So look, we're very, very fortunate here at the moment in Limerick, and we're not stupid either. Like, do you know what I mean? Like, we know that there's a major hurdle to be jumped in the semi-final, and so the past history over the years has shown that Limerick, when they've left after highs of Munster finals, I suppose in 13 and 19 in particular, do you know what I mean, we fell flat in the semi-final, and those lessons, I suppose, will be well heeded over the next 3 weeks as they prepare for whatever, who they ever to meet in the semi-final.
Niall, there's plenty of conversations over John Kiley's selection, not picking Aaron Galan. He brought him on quite early. Do you think he can afford to not start him going forward from here?
Yeah, look, John Kiley's a smart boy. He's a shrewd operator. I suppose he had his own reasons for not starting him. Do you know what I mean? Graham Mull has been a savage servant, but I suppose yesterday just wasn't going maybe his way early on. And look, to have a sub like that to bring on. So I suppose he left there in his spot like the rest of them, Ruby, and saying no different to or my own club mate here, Dan Morrissey. Like, Dan is a superb player, has done nothing wrong, but So that's the competition that's there, and I suppose you know it yourself as a sports person. When you're put ill at ease, when you're uncomfortable, you tend to get a lot more out of yourself. So there's no guarantee you'll be playing the next day. That's the way it is, and you know what I mean. That there's strength in the bench there as well. So yeah, it worked out. Aaron had a huge impact, especially in the third quarter.
Do you think it worked the other way though? Not starting him, almost dropping him, sparked that reaction out of him. I'd be a believer in that. I didn't see it myself when I was riding and I hated being dropped, but it does spark a reaction, people.
It does, and geez, it drops more often than any of them. It does drop, yeah, it does. Well, Aaron, look, he's been a little bit off his levels, but he's carrying a few injuries there as well, and do you know what I mean? I said, yeah, it did spark a reaction, but I suppose there's no one man bigger than that team, definitely now, more so than ever, and do you know what I mean? It puts everyone else, kind of puts them on their tips to their toes, and if Limerickers have longevity as a team at the height of their powers, then decisions like that are going to be crucial. And I suppose just one thing on it is that the influence of Brian Cody on all of the managers over the weekend, you can actually see it. Like, John Kiely has taken a leaf out of Cody's book. He carries himself with the same grace and virtue. He's not afraid to make the hard decisions, and everything that they do is backed up on honesty and work rate, application, intensity. And so I think you saw a little bit of that in Matty Kenny, you saw it in Brian Lohan, you know what I mean? Even you've seen it in all the managers. So, you know what I mean? That Kenny template is still the template that everyone else is writing off of.
Yeah, and another thing that you saw as well, when you do think the fact that he didn't start some of the big players, is ruthlessness, and we know that Cody has that as well, and those managers that you named out there as well, Matty Kenny and Brian Lohan, are well capable of being ruthless as well. What about Liam Sheedy though? When you think about that third quarter and being the opposing manager and seeing that unfold in front of you, is there anything that he could have done?
To be honest, Marie, no, it's like, do you know what I mean? It's like a crack comes in the dam, and like once momentum shifts against you, it's very, very hard to stop it. You can go down, you can go injured, you can hope for something to go your way, you might get a goal against the run of play, but I suppose inevitably Tip in the first half were, they're incredible. Do you know what I mean? You have to be fair to Tip. Like, Tip didn't get a whole pile of credit for beating Clare. A lot of the commentary centred around the refereeing decision after it. Like, and Tip hurled really well as that game progressed. And in the first half yesterday, like, they took a chance, they set up, they had a game plan, and they punted a lot of high balls, so the wind was at their back. And they just ghosted in on breaks, and they got two goals off him. And to be honest, there was a couple of more occasions where lads were free if it had broken the other way. So, look, he'll be very disappointed, and he knows, maybe more so in the fact that he knows that they brought everything that they had. And ultimately, it was still way too short. And if these teams meet again, like, and again, it's no criticism of Tip, but I don't think that Tipperary team at this stage of their life cycle will beat this Limerick team at this stage of their life cycle. And I suppose, look, that again, and Ruby, he criticised me for having splinters in my arse the last time we got off, when I said the Tip still wouldn't beat Limerick, but they'd have a big win in them, and I'd still stand over that. The quality of their stickmen, like the exhibition that Jason Ford gave in the first half, Bubbles, like Jake Morris is starting to come of age. So, yeah, it depends on what prerogative he has, but I think it'll still be class half full for Liam Sheedy this evening.
Could he have gone for fresher legs sooner?
Say that again?
Could he have gone for some fresher legs sooner than he did? I mean, the speed and intensity
again,
Tipperary
probably
playing.
Blunt, I don't think he has them. He doesn't have them to the level that are needed. And do you know what I mean? He took on a job. If he didn't go with those fresh legs in 19, then he's not going to turn around in what may prove to be the last year of his reign and throw them in. He's going to go with what he has trusted. And look, that'll be for the next man, whether it's at the end of this year or the following year, that'll be for the next man to blow out all these 20s and 21s.
Yeah, interesting you say that, but Brendan Cummins in his column today just made the point that he was delighted to see Mark Keogh, Brian McGrath, Paddy Cadell come on, and he said that Sheedy's going to have to trust those younger guys at the start and maybe bring them on and use the experienced guys later to finish the job. Now, we don't have time to get into that now. We're going to move on to the Leinster hurling final, but I think it was worth pointing that out as well, that there are some younger guys there that maybe he just needs to change his approach. Look, let's look at Kilkenny and Dublin. Kilkenny won comprehensively. It was quite a depleted Dublin side because of COVID. What is your assessment of Kilkenny? Because it is hard to know after that game.
Joanne Marie, it's like every weekend we talk about it, we talk about refereeing decisions, or we talk about the brilliance of the Tips or Clares or whoever. There's Kilkenny, they're National League champions. Some will argue it's not a bona fide National League. They're now Leinster champions. They're inside in an All-Ireland semi-final, not a word about them. They have a bench as good as any bench when you can bring on the likes of Walter Walsh, you know, Killian Buckley, Anna Murphy. They scored, contributed 5 points from play coming down the home straight. He's coming with a team. Like, do you know what I mean? Like, yeah, Dublin were depleted, but that game, as much as Dublin threw at them in the first half, it was never in doubt. And you know, whoever comes, like the next couple of weeks are going to be really crucial to see what Galway do. Apologies there. The next couple of weeks are going to be really crucial to see what how Galway come, that Galway Waterford match in particular, because they still are two of the contenders, and I still have my eye on Galway. I think once they get things right, that they're going to be a formidable opposition, and possibly for Kilkenny in the semi final.
As you said, the Galway Waterford match, like Waterford yesterday, Laois came at them, gave them all they could. Seamus Cheddar Plunkett was saying he didn't want a moral victory after, but Cheddar or Laois did serve it up to Waterford. Do Waterford even have it in them to take on Galway?
Look, I suppose the nature of that game was Waterford were 8 points up going into the third quarter. Maybe their eye was already gone on to the following weekend. Momentum again swung. Laois outscored them 2-6 to 3 points. And John, once again, a game swings against you, momentum goes against you. It'll be a worry that they struggled over the finish line in the finish. That would be a worry to them as well. And they're still kind of restructuring their team. Austin Gleeson gone back out to centre field the last day. Patrick Kern after coming in, Stephen Bennett. And that reliance on Stephen Bennett in the forwards is going to be a worry to them. Honestly, I think we're in a far better position before they play Clare. A little bit of their momentum has been lost now, and that would be a worry for them against Galway. But in the same breath, like, Laois have fantastic hurlers, and last year in the qualifiers, Laois were only beaten by a point by Clare. Do you know what I mean? Obviously served up a huge game against Antrim, and they're not a million miles off being a more consistent team. And look, credit to them too, because they really showed that they're worth their place in the McCarthy Cup.
So we know as well now that Clare will face Cork. Clare overcame a spirited Wexford team on Saturday in Semple Stadium. Did you see enough from Clare to think that they can progress in this championship?
I think after. I think it's about time maybe we started giving them credit.
Marie's delighted with you. She's smiling at the other end of the camera here. You said all the right things.
She's delighted. See, we're softening them up there because we're worried in Limerick that they might be on the same side of the draw as us. And we'll have nowhere to go on our holidays if we end up with them. But no, look, Clare are coming. Again, it's the unsung guys in Clare. Like, we've spoken about Tony Kelly's and John Conlon's, how brilliant, and they're brilliant, and fair enough too. But like, it's like Paul Flanagan there, Kyle Malone, Ryan Taylor. It's like the last couple of weekends out, these guys have gotten better and better. And do you know what? They're repaying the faith in Nohan. I think anyone who sees Nohan, like, he is just, he's a guy that, yeah, he might come across as a grumpy and all the rest, but you know where his heart is. You know, he's as honest as day is long. And they're going to take beating against Cork. Like, Cork are they're on kind of dodgy ground as well for that Cork team, because Cork have to beat Clare. The pressure is on Cork, and do you know what I mean? Clare have produced a few results, and if they get Aaron Shanahan firing a bit more, Aidan McCarthy still doing what he's doing, and Tony a little bit more out of him than maybe the last day, they're going to be opposition to be reckoned with too.
Starting fast has been a trait of Clare's lately. How were Wexford so unprepared for that?
Again, far be it for me, because a lot of guys better qualified managers and pundits of the game, but I think Davey has got it wrong with them. I think, you know what I mean, this game plan, maybe it seemed to centre around trying to find a game plan that nobody else had, whether it was right for Wexford or whether it wasn't right for Wexford. I suppose the nature of it was they got huge results out of it early doors, which at that level of their development as a team, their players, they trusted in it. But I suppose over the last 2 or 3 years, a lot of those players have developed, but I think the game style, the game plan that they've been playing hasn't suited them. They only pushed up in the end of their league encounter between the two teams when they punished Clare, albeit Clare with 14 men. And the same the last day is when they pushed up, they got totally different results. You had Laois Chin, Conor McDonald, if you had them at the edge of the square getting a regular supply of ball, they would have asked a lot more questions of Clare. I think they missed the boat. I think he got it badly wrong with them this year.
And so be it. They are out. So Clare will face Cork. The winners will play. Do we know yet?
No, but again, and I said that will have a bearing on it, because as I said, it's where maybe the likes of, if Galway can get through next weekend, Galway are really going to be a team that they'll have 2 or 3 games under them, and they are a team that, to me, they're still the real, I won't call them dark horses, but I think they're really contenders for the All-Ireland here.
Game on 2FM with Green Firm. Naturally good food packed with protein.
Game on 2FM.
Welcome back to Game On with Maria and Ruby. It was also a highly entertaining weekend of Gaelic football, and to look back on it, we are joined by former Donegal player Brendan Devaney. And Brendan, I guess we really do need to start with Brewster Park, the Ulster semi-final, Tyrone defeating Donegal. It was a tough loss for Donegal, but they really, really battled right to the end.
Yes, Maria, listen, it was a scorching Brewster Park there yesterday, and you know, it's such a shame, listen, outside of obviously being a Donegal fan, that the Murphy sending off stopped us would have been an absolute classic. You know, after that, you were just waiting for Tyrone to open up, particularly because their bench was going to be so strong. We all knew it. They were going to send in the cavalry. If Donegal had been 10-5 up, even if they were 10-5 up at that time, that Murphy missed the penalty, mate, I still think that the game was a 50-50 at that point. So good was the Tyrone bench. But as it stands, once they missed the penalty, Murphy got off. You just say, listen, it's only a matter of time what Donegal are beat by. And the fact that they clung in as well as they did, they got the goal from Keelan McGonigal, which kept the game some way in the melting pot. But really, Marie, you were just waiting for Tyrone to take over, and they did in the end. And it's probably no surprise that, listen, their bench kicked 6 points and they won by 6 points. And I think that tells a big tale.
Brendan, you're green and gold to the core. So should Murphy have got the line or not?
Ruby, listen, I don't think you can have any complaints about it. I think that Ruby, this actually goes back to him being rusty, and which is obviously because he was injured. You know, you look at his first tackle, he kind of throws out the arm. You could say, could the ref let him away with a word there, a warning? The big thing about Murphy is a lot of people criticise refs for not. Murphy came in very, because he's such a powerful man, he often hits people very hard in the tackle. And he seemed to get away for 3 years, and then a lot of people highlighted it, and I've noticed refs pick up on it now, and wonder did that get into Joe McCallan's mind. The second one really was an accident, but whether it was a black or another yellow, even though he didn't mean it, there had to be a card come out. So as much as it kind of ruined the game, listen, once you had the first, the second one had to have some kind of card, and I don't think it was intentional, but he did have to go at that point.
Yeah, you could see by him that he knew he had to go as well. He was off the pitch pretty rapid. But it kind of does raise the question, should he have even started? Like, he wasn't 100%. I think you could probably see that in him. I'm sure if he probably wouldn't have kicked out like that anyway. But should they have approached it differently with him?
Yeah, I mean, I guess it's always the question mark then, should he? You know, if he kicks that penalty, for example, as I say, and Donegal go on to hold on to that lead and won the match, and it looked like he was pacing himself, whether that being fitness or the heat of the day, he definitely was playing his way into the game. But me, for even for Freeze alone, you know, you looked at the Derry game early on last week, and the left hand side, McBertie goes for a kick that Murphy would put over 99 times out of 100, and he puts it wide. And if you're talking about tight games, which this game would have been 15-15, those frees are vital. You've seen Langdon miss one at that point, which was a vital, would have taken it back to 1 point. He kicked a brilliant one before at a 45. He chose to kick this one from the ground. I think he should have kicked it from his hands. And he puts it wide because it's just that bit of tension and he's not used to being in that thing. But I think Bonner was thinking, whatever Michael Murphy does, he's going to occupy, you know, some of Tyrone's best back line, you know, Hamsey, McNamee. Somebody's going to have to be detailed in and around the house. And if he goes out the pitch then, he's a good go-to man. And frees are so vital. And I think that's why Donegal started him yesterday.
Looking, Donegal obviously are out. Tyrone brought on Cathal McShane, Tiernan McCann, Conor McKenna. Going to the Munster final, or Ulster final even, sorry, correct my geography there. Going to the Ulster final, do you think Tyrone will be up for Monaghan?
Yeah, certainly. Ruby, listen, Tyrone for me, I've been saying this for years about their squad. They have by far the best squad in Ulster. And listen, this is a strange thing. I don't want to criticise Mickey Hart too much because everything he did to Tyrone, but there's no doubt, and I've watched Tyrone intensely as much as I've watched Donegal. They're near neighbours. They are a fanatical football county. And you look at the ingredients for a team to be challenging for All-Ireland. We've seen our neighbours Derry drop off the Richter scale because the interest just wasn't there with the county team. Started to come back a bit now. There's a huge love of football and Tyrone, which goes right through the whole county, which you don't have in a lot of counties. They are a football-mad county. And I just think the last few years, they were playing under a bit of a tactical, like a robotic nature. They weren't being free to let go. And we've seen this with Donegal after Rory Gallagher and Jim left with all the defensive tactics. Bonner came in and there was a wee bit of freshness, a wee bit of pep about them. Players were beginning to step up and play the game a bit. It looked like for the last few years under Hart, that they, every player was defender first, including the forwards. And I just was like shaking my head, thinking, there's so much talent there, you've got to let certain players play. Whereas the Donegal lads, there seemed to be a wee bit more enjoyment, a wee bit of flair in them. What we seen yesterday was, for me, a big warning sign for the rest of Ulster. And I think this Tyrone team, the only thing they're lacking now maybe is a midfield pair. And, you know, they still haven't replaced the likes of a Colin Cabinet in there. They need a ball winner, ball winners and ball players, I think, still in there. That said, that's the only criticism. They've a good keeper, they've a great defence, they've man-on-man markers. Their forward line supreme, and you mentioned the benches. I mean, being able to bring in players like that, unbelievable. And don't forget, Rudy, if you're thinking from a Donegal perspective, earlier on in the year in the league, Donaghy kicks 10 points against Donegal. He doesn't even get a run yesterday. Now, if somebody from Donegal kicked 10 points against Tyrone, you can be sure he's playing in that game. So this is the difference.
They'll be building a statue of him.
Yeah.
So that Ulster football final between Tyrone and Monaghan will be moved to Croke Park to facilitate a bigger crowd. Look, there has to we have to give huge credit to those Monaghan players who defeated Armagh on Saturday night. It was so emotional watching them. Just only a few hours after they found out that Brendan O'Duffy had passed away in a car accident. I don't know how they did it. It must have been so tough.
Yeah, listen, it was horrible that had to happen. Yeah, I mean, I'm down here in Gidor at the minute. Like, he's great family ties just over in Ranafast there, and like, your heart just goes out to him. And you know, hearing Seamus McEnany talking about not just the player that he was, but the leader that he was, you know, he had a vote for a captaincy when he had the Donegal Miners, and almost all of them voted for the lad to be captain. That's how well he got he was. So, you know, for everything that was going ahead with him, and obviously, Monaghan Harps lad, you know, he's got friends, club mates that are involved. And as you say, the Bandy used to be his manager as well. So what a tough day. So many emotions going into that game. And, you know, what a game as well. So tough on Monaghan. And it really kind of, I suppose, in terms of sport, we get so entrenched and so in love with it. And our emotions get so high. And then something like that happens. And you think, listen, it's a game of football.
Yeah, and Banty, as you mentioned there, he did speak so well afterwards, and he mentioned that, and so did all of the players as well. They all knew him so well and spoke of him, and look, our thoughts are with his family and friends in such a very tough time. There was action as well in the Leinster Senior Football Championship, two semi-finals, all eyes were on Dublin, and they weren't the Dublin that we're used to seeing. They did beat Meath 216 to 113, but it wasn't a really impressive performance from them.
Yes, I mean, are we finally seeing this end to the dominance, and maybe the end of the speculation of splitting Dublin up? You split them up now, they might be in a bit of bother, I'm sure. we might put that argument to bed finally. I don't think there'll be two Dublin teams now. You always say about the A and the B. That day seems to be ending, and yeah, as the squad finally gets watered down, the replacements coming in just don't have that experience. Now, that said, me, you know, 15 on 15, they still are the best team in Ireland, and yet where to get the acid test for them. You know, Meath just couldn't get within that 4 point. And listen, they battled back bravely. But the fact that they did, and didn't get buried, you know, is testament to them in terms of their trying to catch up. But it's also a reality that Dublin are finally dropping a small bit. You know, the big test is still coming down the road. I mean, let's hope Kildare can give them a game again. And maybe they'll be hard to
buy. That's the big test, Brendan. It's coming down the road. You're right. You see what they did to Westmeath yesterday. Tell you, that test is coming for them.
Yeah. And you know what? I'm just thinking about certain forwards there yesterday, and you know, we talk about improving the weaker counties and being able to be on that big stage. And listen, Rian O'Neill's performance, like, unbelievable yesterday. And just think, that guy deserves to be a co-part on big days. We want to see his skills. You know, Conor McManus, of course, as usual. Jack McCann give a great performance. You know, Grugan as well, Murnan, and then you look across and you look at Daniel Flynn, the goal, Heslin on the other side. You know, there's so many like players that have that unbelievable ability that, let's be honest, don't always get the chance to be in that big game. And I suppose it's a bit of a negative from Leinster that those players don't get to be sometimes progressing because of Dublin's dominance. But listen, that's what it is now. It's up to them to try and catch up. But it looks like they are making, they're matching it, they're coming up, and Dublin seem to be dropping a small bit. Listen, that said, until somebody actually beats Dublin, we really can't criticise them too much.
No, we can't. And obviously, James McCarthy, Fenton, Kilkenny, they still have a huge spine to that team, whatever way you look at it.
Aye, and listen, that experience, I suppose, when it comes to that, like, know-all to win championships, and you won a championship game or won an All-Ireland, you look at Armagh, what happened at the end of that game was complete inexperience from where they were. And Monaghan realised that, and Armagh coughed up three possessions, gave away two ridiculous frees. And you look at Dublin, the thing that's always got them across the line is that out-and-out composure. You look at Conor McManus yesterday, I mean, I would love to get the fella's DNA checked. He seems to have some kind of ice in his veins. Like I would argue that Conor McManus in the last 10 years has maybe been the best forward in Ireland. The man is just superhuman, and he's kicking frees there, and you just expect them to score these ridiculous tough frees. And you look at the Dublin forwards and the Dublin machine, they all play like that. They've got this real iciness about them, and sure, listen, we've given them a bit of the game yesterday. Maybe Desi's a bit glad of that, but certainly that Dublin machine that's been rolling over teams isn't doing it at the minute, so it should set up for an interesting championship.
It really should. Brendan Devaney, thank you so much for joining us, and we will catch up with you again very, very soon. Ruby, that is all we have time for. We'll all be tuning in to the BBC Panorama documentary tonight to see what is going on in the world of racing, and we will be discussing it with you tomorrow, and also Richie Forrestal.
Yeah, I can't say I'm looking forward to it, Marie, but I will be tuning in to watch it. I just don't understand how horses end up in abattoirs, full stop.
Well, we will go into detail with that tomorrow. We'll also be talking to Kieran McCarthy of the Southern Star about how our rowers are going to get on in the Olympic Games, and Mark Langdon will have all the transfer news. Tara Stewart is up next.